From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
We're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. And each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about the folks who have detailed information on saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses. So please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you do have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil and paper handy and listen for the contact information in the latter part of the show. Well, there's a lot of action going on, and we're going to start out at the Felix and Little River Demo Emergency Action Camp. This is a place taking place up in Oregon. It's an action camp in the North Umpqua, and it's going to start Friday, November 8th and go through Sunday, November 10th. They'll have workshops including tree climbing, red tree vole surveys, wilderness first aid, herb walks, hikes to Felix and the Little River Demo sales, and much more. Carpools will leave the Growers Market at 454 Willamette, and I believe that's in Portland, Oregon, at 10 a.m. on Friday. Or is it Eugene? I don't know. They didn't put it in here. I'm pretty sure it's Portland. What to bring? Be prepared for cold weather, possibly snow. Bring tarps and tents or warm sleeping bags, rain gear, food to share. If you need more information, maps, or questions, and if you're interested in carpools on Saturday, call the Cascadia Forest Defenders. They're number 503-684-8977. That's 503-684-8977. Or stop by 454 Willamette, room 205 in Portland, Oregon. Just when you thought all was quiet in the Umpqua, Felix and Little River Demo may be logged this winter. Felix is 330 acres of old growth, 11.2 million board feet. Felix has risen from the dead thanks to Hogan's delisting of the coho. They really want to get their saws on this one this winter if possible. Once again, that's an action camp in the North Umpqua, Friday, November 8th through Sunday, November 10th, and leaving from the Growers Market in Portland at 10 a.m. on Friday. Moving to Northern California, a hike to the hole in the headwaters. Logging has started. There will be a legal hike to the hole in the headwaters this Saturday, October 27th, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. I know that for many of you out there in the rebroadcast world, that's before you hear this, but Maxam Pacific Lumber is currently logging the 705-acre second growth stand of 75-year-old redwoods that is actually within the boundaries of the Headwaters Forest Preserve. This gentle 8-mile round-trip flat hike on Saturday will feature a teach-in at the boundary of where the hole in the headwaters begins. There are carpools from the Arcata Co-op in Arcata or the Redway Post Office at 10 a.m., and they drive to the Elk River Road exit just south of Eureka and take Elk River Road 7 miles to the parking lot at the end, bearing right as you go. Bring a bag lunch, boots, water, drums, and a peaceful spirit. Camping info will be provided on site. And if you want more information, call 707-825-6598. That's 707-825-6598. Or send email to ensopro, E-N-S-O-P-R-O, at asis.com. What have you got for us there, Jason?
All right. For those monkey wrenchers on California or on the West Coast, this is for you to help protect the Headwaters Preserve. This is an urgent forest defense alert. United States Forest Service has signed off on the Timber Harvest Plan 520, giving Pacific Lumber the green light to go in and log, which started Tuesday, 23rd of October. All has been peaceful on the whole in the Headwaters logging for some time, so it comes as a surprise. Pacific Lumber filled a timber harvest plan a few years back to log right up to the borders of the Headwaters Preserve. In fact, the ancient redwoods in Headwaters surround the logging plan on three sides. I anticipate there will be a base camp and call for help. Especially needed are nonviolence trainers to help with Earth First, and people who can volunteer to do phone work, answering, and calling. Here we go again. Whew, gotta love this. Please contact Alicia Littletree in, I think this is Sonoma County or Mendocino area. Her number is area code 707-462-9145. Again, that's 707-462-9145.
And here's the latest news from the hole in the Headwaters logging. Pacific Lumber began logging the long-disputed hole in the Headwaters logging plan on Tuesday, October 23rd, and nine protesters were arrested yesterday on Wednesday morning.
Woo!
An activist known as Owl, who was arrested at the logging gate, commented that our dialogue with the loggers was quite civil, and in fact they were expressing concern that the interaction be kept on a level where no one would get hurt or injured in any way. What is interesting, though, was the fact that many of them told us they were brought in from out of state, from Oregon and Idaho. The controversial logging plan THP1-97-520, comprising over 700 acres of redwood and Douglas fir forest, runs alongside the South Fork of the Elk River. Despite the fact that the California Water Board set what environmentalists touted as a good precedent by requiring water course impact monitoring on Pacific Lumber logging plans, a convoluted and politically charged process is allowing Pacific Lumber to proceed on the plan that sits entirely within the outer boundaries of the publicly owned Headwaters Preserve. This area was identified as a high priority for acquisition after the state and federal governments purchased 7,500 acres of old growth and cutover land in what has become known as the Headwaters Preserve via the 1999 Headwaters deal, or backdoor deal. The priority stems from the location of the forest within the preserve, now under BLM jurisdiction, and in the planning process for wilderness designation and restoration, and its location 150 feet above the South Fork of the Eel. Although heavily impacted, the South Fork is considered one of the best coho salmon spawning grounds in California and also supports runs of Chinook and steelhead trout. It is one of only five remaining streams on the north coast of California with viable salmon spawning beds. Sediment from logging-related landslides and logging roads are among the primary reasons for the drastic declines in salmon populations on the north coast. As part of California's portion of the funding for acquisition of the Headwaters deal, $80 million was included for the purchase of Owl Creek Grove and other high-value habitat areas, the area along the South Fork targeted specifically. $13 million remained after the purchase of the 1,200 acres in Owl Creek, but due to Pacific Lumber's refusal to negotiate for purchase, the money's earmark expired and it reverted to the general fund in the summer of this year. The logging plan, that's THP 520, was long under litigation with an injunction granted in July of last year. There are five other Pacific Lumber THPs under consideration by the California Department of Forestry located in the South Fork of the Elk River, comprising 1,656 acres, which could subject 20-30% of the South Fork to catastrophic damage over the next 1 or 2 years. If you like background maps or litigation history, see the EPIC website at www.wildcalifornia.org. That's www.wildcalifornia.org.
All right, here's a backup showing our government actually can help out us forest protectors. The Pacific Lumber has been ordered to monitor water quality. In a precedent-setting move, a state water board ordered Pacific Lumber Company to monitor potential environmental damage from its logging in the Headwaters region of Northern California. The state purchased the Headwaters forest area of Humboldt County with its old-growth redwoods from the Pacific Lumber for $480 million nearly 3 years ago, but the Pacific Lumber retained a 720-acre site in the middle dubbed the Hole in the Headwaters. The State Water Resources Control Board ordered the company and its affiliated Scotia Pacific Lumber Company to monitor water quality in the South Fork of the Elk River that might be affected by erosion caused by logging of the area. The board cited the potential effect on three threatened species of fish that live there. It was the water board's first decision affecting timber cuts outside the state's usual regulatory process. That could prompt a court appeal, said Jim Brannan, Pacific Lumber's director of government affairs. The monitoring could cost the company as much as $250,000 over 10 years. It's $250,000 over 10 years, he said, but Pacific Lumber is anxious to begin logging and may decide not to fight the new requirements. Environmental groups hailed the order after years of unsuccessfully asking the State Department of Forestry and Fire Protection to require similar monitoring before permitting logging elsewhere. And a quick question, how much do they make off of redwood?
An old growth redwood tree could be as much as $25,000 or $30,000. That's on the stump.
Jeez.
And then of course that'll double when they sell it at a retail store.
Oh my God! Yeah, and they're complaining about water quality. It's going to cost them $250,000 over 10 years.
That's ten trees.
Yeah, eat it, guys. We're protecting our environment.
Moving to animal liberation news, Ellsworth, Iowa fur farm raided second time in 1 week. The Animal Liberation Front has claimed responsibility for a second raid in 1 week at Scott Nelson's fur farm in Ellsworth, Iowa. Last week on October 16th, Earth First Radio reported that ALF activists entered the farm and released all 2,000 mink into the surrounding area. Early this week, the same activists returned and released all the mink which had been recaptured following last week's release. These people are quite serious, states David Barbarash, ALF spokesperson. Fur farms have gone out of business in the past as a result of ALF raids, and I have no doubt they will put this mink prison out of business as well. Here is the complete text of the communique. 10-16-2001, ALF liberated 2,000 mink at Scott Nelson Mink Ranch in Ellsworth, Iowa. 6-23-2001, ALF liberates all recaptured mink at Scott Nelson Mink Ranch in Ellsworth, Iowa. The first time we visited Scott Nelson Mink Ranch in Ellsworth, Iowa, we opened every cage on the property. We intended to close the place down. Unfortunately, some of the mink were recaptured. To demonstrate our complete seriousness regarding the freedom of these animals and the contempt for the people responsible for these horrible places, we again visited the fur farm and reopened every cage on the property. We demand that these mink are allowed to remain free, ALF. The Animal Liberation Front is an international underground movement of compassionate people who work to free animals from places of abuse, torture, and suffering. All ALF actions are nonviolent in nature, in that no animals, human or non-human, are injured or killed during the course of an action. And we thank the North American Animal Liberation Front press office for that announcement. And moving to England, a warning after mink are released from an English farm. A criminal inquiry has been launched after hundreds of mink were released from a farm in the New Forest. The mink were released from a farm near Ringwood, England, which was at the center of a similar incident 3 years ago. Officials from the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs were called in to lay traps around the area in the Hampshires. Residents are warned not to approach the animals, but to inform police. And as of press time here at Earth First Radio, no groups had taken responsibility for that action, but mink releases are a specialty of the Animal Liberation Front.
Here's an update on the Buffalo Field campaign. The mercury is dropping as the Mountain Department of Livestock sightings are rising. With only a handful of bison out of the park, I wonder why they are even here. As they stop to unload their horses, I see two bald eagles circling overhead, and I feel the eagles are thinking the same as me. Here comes another torturous winter for the bison and all other animals in the area. My mind stops, wondering as the sounds of hazing operation echo through the woods. Three magnificent bulls run across the highway, being pushed by two cow protectors on horseback. Little do these cowboys know that the buffalo are full of energy today and don't plan on going peacefully into the park. The buffalo runs straight into a thick patch of willows just south of the Madison River. We drive up to a spot overlooking this runaround. We see two little heads bobbing up and down, and three big buffalo running round and round. It doesn't take long for the Department of Livestock to lose their way and the buffalo graze outside the park, as they have for generations, for yet another day. When the Department of Livestock aren't in town, we spend a lot of time tracking buffaloes so we know where to go when the cavalry comes. On these most recent recons, we have seen a lot of winter wildlife running to the area. Trumpeter swans, golden and bald eagles have made their presence known. Those big furry beasts we love so much are putting on their winter coats as well. It is a great time to be in the Yellowstone ecosystem. If ever you have thought about donating, now is the time. Of course, we could always use money, but there are many other things we could use in this fast-approaching winter. Things like new digital video cameras, wool socks to keep our little piggies warm, wool pants and sleeping bags that can work in negative 40 degree Fahrenheit weather, and warm winter boots. Remember, Buffalo Wars will be aired on PBS on November 1st. Check your local station for times. This is a great opportunity to gather your neighbors, pop some popcorn, and let's see the firsthand what's going on in the last wild, free-roaming buffalo and our campaign to protect them. Enjoy, and if you'd like to contact the Buffalo Field Campaign, their address is as follows. Post Office Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That's P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. And their phone number is area code 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. And that's buffalo@wildrockies.org. Buffalo at Wild Rockies. Check that stuff out. Back to you, Dennis.
All right. Every once in a while, we have a sad note. And tonight, we're reading an obituary for a wise elder. James Phillips was 70 years old, an environmental advocate called the Fox. James F. Phillips, an environment advocate who used flamboyant tactics like putting metal caps on top of belching smokestacks and then leaving a note signed the Fox, died on October 3rd in Aurora, Illinois. He was 70 years old. The cause was complications of diabetes, his sister Dorothy Springs said. Mr. Phillips led a dual existence as a middle school science teacher and an ecological saboteur, using techniques later refined by Greenpeace and other environmental groups. He never acknowledged that he was the Fox, although family members and friends confirmed that Mr. Phillips was. He carved a peculiar niche for himself, said his friend Ralph Fries, a blacksmith and canoe maker who accompanied Mr. Phillips on a mission or two. He tried to disguise himself, but it was a thin disguise. The Fox plugged polluting sewer outlets and left skunks on the doorsteps of the executives who owned them. He collected 50 pounds of sewage that a company had spewed into Lake Michigan and dumped it in the company's reception room.
Yeah.
I got tired of watching the smoke and the filth and the little streams dying one by one, he said in an interview with Time magazine in October of 1970. Finally, I decided to do something. The courts weren't doing anything to these polluters except granting continuance after continuance. Much of what the Fox did was against the law, and the police were hardly amused by the Fox's face, sometimes smiling, sometimes grim, that he customarily drew inside the O of Fox on the notes he left behind. Robert Colewelter, a local police sergeant, said in an interview with Newsweek in the October of 1970 that the authorities would charge the Fox with trespassing and criminal damage to property if they could catch him, but they could not. It's kind of hard to lift fingerprints from the inside of a sewer, Sergeant Colewelter explained. At least one government official suggested that the Fox was performing a valuable service. The official, David Dominick, commissioner of the Federal Water Quality Administration, said in a speech before the American Society of Civil Engineers in 1970, "The Fox, by his deeds, challenges us all with the question, do we as individuals in a technological society have the will to control and prevent the degradation of our environment?" James Frederick Phillips was born in Aurora, Illinois on November 20, 1930. His grandparents were asparagus farmers, and he grew up on a farm. He earned a degree in biology from Northern Illinois University. He later taught science in middle school for 10 years. In the late 1960s, he was distressed to see dead ducks on the polluted Fox River, which meanders through Aurora to the Illinois River. He decided to take direct action. He stopped up the sewer pipe that was spewing sudsy waste into the Fox River with plywood. "Nobody ever stuck up for that poor, mistreated stream," he told Newsweek, "so I decided to do something in its name." He moved to bigger targets like United States Steel. In a 1970 column in the Chicago Daily News, Mike Royko told of his darting about Chicago, putting up signs attacking the company for polluting. For example, he posted a sign in a coffee shop window, "Making steel is my business, murdering your environment is my sideline." Mr. Phillips later was a field inspector for the Kane County Environmental Department west of Chicago before retiring in 1986 to start the Fox River Conservation Foundation. He got a chance to do it legally, Mr. Freeze said. The fox's escapade stopped after the enactment of state and federal laws to control pollution. His passion for the environment persists in a local group named for him, Friends of the Fox. He's survived by two brothers, Herb in Chicago and Albert of Veruca, Wisconsin, and two sisters, Dorothy Spring of Aurora and Margaret Webb of Fayetteville, Arkansas. And we'd like to thank Douglas Martin of the Today magazine for that story.
Tree Sit woes legislation to end cutting of Indiana's state forests. As a tree sit in Indiana's Yellowwood State Forest enters its seventh month, a state lawmaker has announced he is introducing legislation to ban timber sales on state-owned forests. The legislation came at the request of the Indiana Forest Alliance and other state groups. I am one who considers tree hugger to be a complementary, not derogatory label, said Representative Mark Cruzan, the Indiana House Majority Leader, the Indianapolis Star, 1012. But even for those who view tree sits with a skeptical eye, the proposal we're working on is hardly radical. What's radical is needlessly cutting down trees in our state forest when they only account for about 1% of the total timber harvest in Indiana. While Indiana Department of Natural Resources officials agree that the state forests produce only 1% of the state's timber cut, they continue to claim that logging in state forests help keep trees healthy and promote environmentally responsible cutting practices. So far, the department has left the tree sitters alone, but says they will extend the time allowed for the buyer to cut the sale. Cruzan says that he was unaware of how little state forests contributed to the timber sale supply until citizens requested the new legislation. I hope introducing the legislation will serve the same purpose with any colleagues and the general public. Signed, Defenders of Wildlife.
Moving to other Indiana news, charges have been dropped against Indiana tree sitters. Prosecutor says cases don't warrant the time or the expense of trials. Prosecutors are dropping charges against more than a dozen people who were arrested in July when police broke up a tree sit aimed at stopping a Westside Bloomington, Indiana construction project. Monroe County Prosecutor Carl Saltzman said the time and resources required to prosecute the cases, not only for his staff but for police and public officials, could be put to better use. In my humble opinion, all these people have more pressing matters than to go after 14 different jury trials, he said. 16 people were arrested July 6th and 7th when police cleared a protest site on the east side of Indiana Highway 37 north of Bloomfield Road. Most were charged with criminal trespass, but a half were also charged with resisting arrest. The action, which began in March with a lone protester occupying a platform in an oak tree, was aimed at stopping construction of the planned Canterbury House affordable housing complex. Opponents said construction shouldn't be allowed on the environmentally sensitive wooded property, which included springs and sinkholes. Two defendants settled their case before the decision was made to drop the charges. Marie Mason of Detroit pleaded guilty to criminal trespass. Her sentence was the one day in jail that she served when arrested, plus $500 in court costs and restitution. Shane Becker of Bloomington, Indiana, entered a pretrial diversion agreement with the prosecutor's office in September. The agreement also covers charges filed when Becker was arrested in late March for allegedly blocking traffic in a downtown critical mass bicycle ride. Under the agreement, his record will be cleared if he stays out of trouble for a year. Good luck, Shane. Charges are being dismissed against Stephen Greg Chadwick, Mike Englert, Ruth Hanford, Lucille Bertaccio, Liam Mulholland, Jared McKinnon, Matthew Bergs, Mark Haggerty, Amanda Skinner, Megan Hayes, Hannah Jones, and Matthew Turicini, all of Bloomington, Jen Wise of Nashville, Tennessee, and Ormond Turcotte of Toronto, Canada. Some were arrested when police said they refused to leave the site. Others said they were there to support friends or record the activity. Saltzman said he offered pretrial diversion to all, but most refused the deal, insisting they hadn't done anything wrong. They demanded jury trials and said they planned to represent themselves in court, and they filed lists of dozens of potential witnesses, including fellow activists, police, journalists, county, and city office holders. The first trial for Chadwick, an Indiana University student, was scheduled for last Thursday, forcing prosecutors to decide that week whether to drop the charges. Englert, the last tree sitter to climb down and be arrested, said he was glad the charges were being dismissed. It's exactly what we felt should happen, he said. I mean, we've already done our time in the trees. He said the tree sit-in protests may not have blocked the 208-unit apartment complex, which is currently under construction, but they called attention to development in and around Bloomington, he said. It did cause everybody to look at it a lot more carefully, Englert said, and it caused a lot of political debate in Bloomington. The Democratic Party was shaken up by it a bit, hopefully so. And that story by Steve Hinnefeld of the Bloomington, Indiana Herald Times, where he is a staff writer. All right, we're going to take a little musical break here and listen to some music off of Uncle Dennis's Earth First CD number one. And this one's called Earth Night Action.
Was Dennis Hayes' vision, but instead of keeping us together, it only caused division. He said, turn down your thermostat and recycle toilet paper, and as long as they contribute, don't confront the corporate rapers. Now there were these griping dissidents holed up in Santa Cruz. They were pondering this problem, smoking joints and drinking booze. They said Earth Day sold out, thinking they could not get caught. So we've come up with a concept, one we know that can't be bought. We'll have an Earth Night Action, yeah, it's a splinter faction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night Action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yeah, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. Some folks said, hey, Santa Cruz just had a big earthquake, and a toppling their power lines was a tactical mistake. But big mountains feeding them their coal, Prince William Sound their oil. Hey, I'm sorry if their fridge went dead and their TV dinner spoiled. We'll have an Earth Night Action, it's instant satisfaction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night Action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yes, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. In San Luis Obispo, they've got Diablo Nuke, but the best that they could fight it with were some songs that made me puke. PG&E has gotta go, but it seems so damn complex. But Earth Night has the answer, Diablo 10 is next. Yeah! We'll have an Earth Night Action, it's a felony infraction. We're gonna take down power lines tonight. We'll have an Earth Night Action, it's an Earth Day reaction. Yes, Santa Cruz ain't gonna have no lights. San Luis Obispo ain't gonna have no lights. L.A. ain't gonna have no lights.
Oh my God.
Houston ain't gonna have no lights. Yeehaw! New York ain't gonna have no lights.
What the fuck?
Gay Paris ain't gonna have no lights. Moscow ain't gonna have no lights.
Hey, hey, hey!
Tokyo ain't gonna have no lights.
And Earth First Radio will be right back. Stay tuned.